and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and Chavruta Yerdana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Yud Tet, page 19. So continuing on the cases of where people have found documents, right? In this case, I'm towards the top of Amud Aleph on Yud Tet. Gufa Matza Get Isha Bashuk. What happens, not if you found documents, you know, in your attic or in your basement, but you found a divorce, a woman's bill of divorce in the marketplace. Bizman Shabal Modeh. And then what happens is, you know, you do your due diligence and you discover that the husband, yes, acknowledges that he wrote this get, he gave the get, right? So that it's a get that was, in fact, functioned as a get. And she should have that document, or the court should have that document, whatever. Yachzir lisha. So then the finder gives it back to the wife. Ein haba modeh. But if the husband does not acknowledge or admit that, in fact, he had given it, you know, fulfilled all the intentions of the get, lo yachzir lo lezeh v'lo lezeh. So then the finder, the person who found it in the marketplace, doesn't give it back, not to the husband nor to the wife. Which is, it doesn't, let's say, give it back to the husband and he'll hold on to it to decide or something like that. No, it doesn't go anywhere, I guess. Finders keepers, there's nothing to be done with it. Bizman Shabal Modeh, so now the Gemara wants to bring, you know, address this question of what happens in the event that the husband acknowledges that he wrote and he gave the get. So there's a braita that says as follows, Bizman Shabal Modeh, Miha Yachzir Lisha, V'lechush Shema Katav Litein Benisan. So now it gets a little complicated, right? So we understand that the finder is supposed to give the get back to the wife, but the Gemara says, hang on, what if he wrote that divorce? He meant to give it a Nisan, and he didn't give it to her, v'lo natan la ad Tishrei. He didn't give it to her until Tishrei. Meaning, yes, it's her divorce. Yes, it's the get that the man wrote that he said that he was writing. He gave it to her. But the terms of how it was actually executed were not the right terms for the get to have functioned the way it was supposed to function. He meant to give it in Nisan in the spring, and he didn't give it until Tishrei in the fall. Ba'azal bal zabin pere minisan ad Tishrei. So then what happens? All that time from Nisan until Tishrei, right, the husband can go and do transactional, you know, he can sell, he can buy, he can sell the produce of his wife's property all that time in the interim between Nisan and Tishrei, because the divorce hasn't really yet been a divorce. Even if he wrote it, she hasn't received it. So then what happens is, what would then happen, the wife has her divorce, the date on the divorce says Nisan, and she might then come to say to all of his customers, ha, that produce is really mine, right? Meaning she could, it wouldn't be her right to do so, because it would really be wrong. She only had to get in Tishrei, but because the document says Nisan, maybe she could finagle it to bring that produce under her own auspices, because she's got a document that indicates that her husband didn't have the right to do the transactions that he made in that time. Now, he did have the right, because he didn't give the get, but the documentation suggests otherwise, and she could really put one over on him, which then calls into question the claim or the position here that the finder should give the get to the wife. The Gemara goes on, Hanich leman d'amar kivan shenatan einav legarsha shuv ein labal peirot. So according to the one, and this is a discussion that we saw back in Gittin, right? The one who says that once he's decided to divorce her, he no longer has the right to start produce stuff anyway, right? The formal divorce isn't what makes, according to this person, right? The formal divorce isn't what makes what removes his rights to her peirot, to the produce, rather the very fact that he decided that he was going to divorce her. But what about the other view that says he does have the right to the produce until he actually gives the bill of divorce, right? Then what does he say? Like, how do you work that out, that she theoretically could come and collect back the produce that he has sold when they weren't yet divorced, because she has a document that says that they were.
Right,
And so the guy says, well, when she goes to the customer to say, give me back that produce, then the customer says to her, or the court would say to her, bring a proof, not only the date of the bill of the divorce, but when did you take possession of the bill of divorce? And only then would they allow her to repossess the produce. Granted, I'm assuming here this is produce that is, for whatever capabilities, stored well, or nuts, or I don't know, dried beans, right? It has to be something that can last all this time. We're not talking about cucumbers in the summertime, which go bad very quickly, at least in Israel. The Gemara asks, Mishnah Mishtarechov, right? How is this different from a Shtarchov? A Shtarchov being the promissory note between a debt, a borrower, and a lender. Right? How is this get that you find in the shuk different in the marketplace, different from a promissory note if you found one in the marketplace? Ditzanan, because we have a Mishnah, right? That Mishnah was on Daf Yud Bet on page 12. Matzah shtarei chov, em yesh behen achrayut nechasim, lo yachzir. Right? It said explicitly in that Mishnah that somebody who found promissory notes, and if they include within the promissory note a property guarantee for that loan, that he can't bring them back to the creditor. Why? Because and there's we had this whole big discussion then, right, about the about what does it mean for the creditor to take possession of the property along with other property that comes along guaranteed. We understood it then that the Mishnah was referring to a case where the person who is liable to pay acknowledges that he has not yet paid the repaid the debt. When we shum shema katav lelavot penisan. So, and likewise, what happens is, or one possible case was, right, that the promissory note can't be returned because, again, what happened if he wrote it with the intent to borrow the money on Nisan, but he didn't borrow it really? He didn't actually get to borrow it until Tishrei. And then what would happen if the, and then the person, the creditor, right, from whom he's borrowed or eventually borrowed, might then come to say, oh, well, you had all this property from Nisan to Tishrei. I'm going to repossess it, from the people to whom you sold, even though that lender wasn't really even in the story yet. So again, we end up with a comparable situation of the creditor being in the position of potentially doing the wrong thing. Having the means to perpetrate the wrong thing. Hatam nami lahadar ki ati lamitraf name alei aiti raya emat matash tarchov liadech. So likewise, the same way that the Gemara says with a divorce, you say, well, not just when were you owed the thing back, but when did you come to take? When did you have that right to come to repossess the debtor's property? You have to say, when did you even get that promissory note? When did this document kick in? Not just when, what's the date on the document, but when did you acquire it? When was it in your hands? And so that seems to be nice and lined up, right? But the Gemara says no. Amar hachi gabi get isha ati lokeach v'tava'a. Right, so it's one thing to say we're talking about a divorce, right? There you're saying that somebody could still come and say to the wife, prove when it was given to her, because he wants to make sure that they were really divorced at this time. Amara hai the hadrua nehila rabbanan legita mishum dolo tagin v'tetev hashta the ka'ati lemitraf tezel v'tetev raya. It's all a lot of Aramaic here, right? Meaning the point here is that when they return, when the sages give her back, give the bill of divorce to her, right? That was the idea that she would get it back to her from the finder. It's so that she's not going to live alone, like she's not going to live without a divorce, because without the bill of divorce, because without that documentation, she can't really prove that she was divorced, and that would be really a bad situation for her. Now she's coming ready to repossess property that her husband sold. So then she has to go and bring the proof of when the bill of divorce came, meaning it's an there's the worry about this woman is kind of finished when she's already trying to, circumvent the timing of the divorce itself. So to say to the to say to her, oh, you have to prove when you got it, makes sense once it's already clear that she already has it. Hacha, but in contrast, the promissory note, Gabe Starchov, Lo Ati Lokech Vitava, the purchaser doesn't come and demand proof, right? Mizahadrua Nahila Rabbanan Lishtarchov, when at the time that the sages give the promissory note to him, meaning it was found and now you're going to give it back to the guy to whom who holds the note, Pshita Lamai Hilchata Adhure Nahila Lemitrafu, because like that's the whole point of the halacha return that the court, right? The halacha is that the court will return it to him. Why? To make sure that he'll then go pay the starchov properly, that he'll repay his debt on time, you know, to make sure and to make sure that he has the documentation that says what he owes and that he will have paid once he has paid. Shma mina kam rabbanan b'milta omek me didei matashtar lidei. And so how do we conclude this? The sages clarified it. What did they say? That when the promissory note comes into the possession of the creditor, and that was prior to the purchase of whatever property from the debtor, like that's the whole point, that they have to be able to conclude the circumstance judiciously without having to ask any proof, because nobody would think to do it in the case of a loan. The need for proof or the let's establish the status of the woman is a more extreme case. I think we've said this before. And so that when you're talking about lending and borrowing, like that next level of investigation may not happen and the shenanigans might actually be successful because there's a lesser burden of proof.
So I think what's interesting is that, you know, unlike some other areas of halacha, there's actually a lot of what are people thinking, right? Like they're trying to figure out what the thought process was, either in giving or not giving, why a document may be lying around. And based on that set of assumptions, that's going to kind of determine some of the, it determines the halacha. And I think it's sort of interesting to think about halacha that way, because usually we think of it as very objective. And thinking about like what someone's thought process is or could be feels very subjective.
Right. Or you're kind of guessing what the norm is.
Right. And like, then could one argue maybe the norm today would be different, or would the norm be different in a different generation? I like how you said it better, right? It's guessing what the norm is.
Yeah, but then what happens if you've got an exception?
Right. Or what if like the norm changes with time? Okay. I'm going to move on to the next part of the Mishnah that talks about datike matana. So if somebody finds like a will or gift documents, okay? And from there, the first, what the Gemara does is it talks, it brings a brisa that talks about these types of documents. Tanu Rabbanan, ezuhi datuki, right? What's a datiki? Tate lemekim velihio, right? So it's basically, it's this shall be valid and enduring. Okay. So that's why it's called that. It's basically almost like a Roshei Tevos, right? It's like an acronym for Ta Tehe Lemakayim Vilehiot. And that's how they get that word. She'im Meit Nechasav Liploni, right? So that if someone dies, right, supposedly, you know, when he dies, the property is passed on. Matana, what's a gift document? Kol Shekatubo Mehayom L'Achar Meta. So that's a document where the clause is written saying that this is a gift that takes effect from today or after the person's death. Okay, so that brace explains what the actual types of documents are. Okay, then they're going to quote another Mishnah that brings a brisa that explains exactly what the definition of a gift document is. I'm going to skip that part, but I'm going to go to where it says Taima, right? What's the reason the Mishnah gives that we don't return these types of documents? Delo amartnu, is it that the benefactor did not say to give it, right? So that's why we don't return it. Ha amartnu, but right, this means to say that if he did say to give it, no need, then we would go ahead and give it. So in other words, if the document's author tells the finder to give it to the recipient, maybe the finder should actually hand that document over to the beneficiary. So the Gemara now points out a contradiction to this idea, uraminhu, okay? And now they're going to quote a brisa. Matza daitikaot, I can't say that word, okay? If one found these wills, apotikiot, right? Or apotiki documents, okay? So this is a document that designates a lien on a specific property of a debtor for a previously unrecorded loan, okay? Umatanot, or gift document. Afalpi sheshnehen modin, even though both parties agree that the document belongs to the beneficiary, lo yachzor lo lazet velo lazet. The finder should not return it to either party, okay? Because we're concerned maybe the document could be used in some type of fraudulent way. This seems to contradict what we just said about our what could be implicit in our Mishnah, that the writer of the document, if he instructs the finder to give it to the recipient, we can do so. Whereas this is saying, like, it doesn't make a difference. If it's a found document, we have some concern for fraud, and that's why we're not going to give it at all. So why is that? So the Gemara answers, I'm a Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. So Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal says, lo kasha, it's not a difficulty. Habibaria, this ruling that we don't return the document as the benefactor instructs, meaning in the brisa, refers to the gift document of a healthy person. Bahabichshiv mera. While the other ruling that we do return the document if the benefactor instructs, this is what's implicit in our Mishnah, refers to the will of the seriously ill person. So the Gemara then explains, why are we concerned about some type of fraud when it comes to a gift document, but not with a will? Matninan diktani, our Mishnah, which teaches ha-amartnu, that if the benefactor says to give the document to the beneficiary, notnin, we give it. Bishchiv mera refers to the case of a will of a seriously ill person, right? A will can basically be returned to its beneficiary. Devar mi hadar lehu, because the benefactor can legally retract it. So in other words, returning the will doesn't make the beneficiary able to necessarily do something fraudulent, because the person who wrote it, the benefactor, can always retract it, okay? So that's why there's a difference with a will. So the Gemara explains the fact that a will can be retracted means we don't worry about fraud. But the Gemara wants to explain what could we worry about. Damrinam, for we say, ma'eklamemer, what type of fraud could there be? Dilma ktava mi kara lahai. Maybe the benefactor first wrote it to, give his property to this person. V'malei v'lo yahava nihile, and then reconsidered and didn't give it to him. V'hadar katva li'ini shachrina. And then he wrote another document giving the property to another person, the Yahavi Nehila, and he gave him that document, right? The second person gets the property. Hashtaka Hadarbe Mehahu Dahavi Nehile. Our concern is what? That the benefactor wants to retract the gift that he gave to the second person, and therefore he tells us to return the will to the first person. So by telling the finder to return the will, the writer basically gives the first person has an opportunity to prove that he actually got the property, since the will that he's a beneficiary to is dated earlier than the document for the second beneficiary. So this is a writer's way of sort of like illegally retracting the gift from the second person. That's not the legal way to do it. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to explain why this concern. So that's what the potential fraud could be. And now the Gemara needs to explain why we don't worry about this type of fraud, okay? Why is it that we allow this will to actually be returned? And so the Gemara is going to, talk about this. Ibn Matanat Bariya Yahavele, if he gave the property to the second person by means of a healthy person's gift document, in other words, he didn't write a will. When he was going to give it to this first person, the benefactor, he changes his mind, he decides to give it to a second person, but he doesn't write a will. He writes a gift document, right? Right? The second person won't lose anything when we return the will. Why? Tiki nafka tarte. Because when both documents are produced in court, batrate zachi, the gift document, which is dated last, actually is the one that takes precedence. That's the one that prevails, okay? And that, the second document, that beneficiary gets the property. The ha hadarbe mikamte, because the later date proves that the benefactor actually retracted that earlier will. Okay? What if that second document was a will? Even matanat shechiv meri nami yahave nehile. Even if he gave the property to the second person by the means of a seriously ill person's gift, right? Meaning a will. Leis bat seda. Again, there's no loss to the second person from this will. De batrate zachi, because the last of the two wills is the one that, you know, sort of takes precedence. Deka hadar beis bei mikamta, because this latter will retracts the earlier one. So the idea basically is that as long as you have this document with the second document with a later date, that's going to be the one that will be upheld in court. So we don't worry about some type of fraudulent scenario where the benefactor says, return the will to the first beneficiary as a way of retracting the second one, because at the end of the day, that just won't hold up. It just doesn't hold up in court. But now the Gemara wants to ask, ki katani bevraisa. When the braisa teaches, afal pi shneihem modin, that even though both parties agree, lo yachzor lazeh velo lazeh, that the finder should not return the document to either party, bivari, it refers to a gift document of a healthy person, right? That gift document can't be returned. The la ba mahadarho, because under law, the benefactor cannot retract his gift. And so therefore, returning the document could allow him to actually perpetrate this fraud. In other words, if the first document, let's say we sold this case of two beneficiaries, but the first document was actually a gift document and not a will, and then he never delivered that first document, but then he wrote a second document giving a gift to a second beneficiary, right? And then he wanted to retract it. He could do that by sort of giving that first gift document back. In that case, the earlier date is the one that's going to trump. And so therefore, there could be a fraud there. So the Gemara from here is going to continue to discuss, a variety of scenarios. So then it's going to go on to want to explain that a gift cannot be retracted does create that the document can be used fraudulently. So that's what it's going to go to next. And then we'll explain like how the benefactor actually could accomplish that and how the court would actually deal with it. That's the rest of that section. I think it's very interesting to see sort of like how specific these different types of documents are. Document is very different than a will document. I think this makes sense to us in our legal, legally today as well. Like we know when somebody wants to gift somebody something, it may not be the same types of documents, right? But do you do it as a trust? Do you do it as a gift? Do you do it in a will? These things, usually we worry about the taxes, right? But all of these things will have different implications of how and when the person can receive that actual property. So it's interesting to see sort of like, these are things that were always, whenever there was property and property needed to be transferred, these types of documents were always around basically. And it's interesting to see sort of like different types of fraudulent scenarios can occur based on what types of documents we're trying to actually deal with. But a lot of this is like how they built out the cases is like inferred. It's not clear when you just read those Mishnah or that Braisa, but on its own.
I'll just add that I'm appreciative of the fact that the Gemara here, this daf is very organized, right? We're going through these cases that the Mishnah outlined and then addressing each one and how they might be different from one another. We jumped over the Shichurei Avadim, but like the where the slaves will be freed. But the Gemara is really like, being nicely systematic about addressing the differences of each case and why we might think they would be similar and why they are in fact different and so on.
Right. And what the fraud would be for each case. Yeah, I agree with you. It's actually a very well-organized staff. And it really just goes through each document and comparing it. If another type of document is involved in that scenario, what the implications would be. Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Revenue Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Time on Facebook. Tomorrow, go and learn.